In Afghanistan, one more try at holding a credible election.
I call upon our nation to change this to an opportunity to strengthen our resolve and determination to move this country forward and participate in the new round of elections.
Second chance. Whoever gets to get a second chance, whoever gets another turn at bat, tell me that.
Well, Hamid Karzai does, actually, on November 7th. Hey, we're all about fresh starts here on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, October 21st. I'm Celeste Headlee here with John Hockenberry.
Good morning, Celeste. Also on the program, Congress wants to weigh in on that alleged fresh start in Afghanistan. Also, credit cards, canceled credit cards, and consumers with no recourse. Two teams, count them, a game away from the World Series and the very serious business of chili. Con carne or without carne?
I'll take it either way. But first, Christine Fair joins us. She's a professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University and a former Afghanistan election monitor. Christine, at this point, is it even possible to hold an election in Afghanistan that the Afghan people will see as legitimate?
Well, I'm not sure that there's any election at this point that the Afghans are going to view as legitimate. In some ways, many Afghans think the process is overdetermined. I think this runoff election is going to be much more important for international capitals that are considering whether and how to invest more billions and, more importantly, dispatching more men and women on military missions to defend a government which their publics view as indefensible.
Okay, Christine, stay with us. We're going to talk about that more in a minute. But first, everything else you need to know this morning.
Well, in the headlines, anticipating some of that skepticism from Christine Fair, the United Nations wants more than half of the top election officials in Afghanistan replaced before next month's runoff election. The head of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, says 200 officials who were complicit in fraud should go. That's as U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates gave a pessimistic outlook on the runoff election.
The issues of corruption and governance that we are trying to work with the Afghan government on are not going to be solved simply by the outcome of the presidential election.
And Gates says ending corruption in Afghanistan is a work in progress.
Meanwhile, the government in Pakistan has ordered the closure of all schools and universities throughout the country. That's after an attack on a university in Islamabad yesterday. Here at home, the president says he wants community banks and small businesses to have more access to the government's $700 billion rescue fund. He's expected to unveil some new initiatives today.
I'm spreading the money around.
That's
our
right.
Partner, the New York Times, has a front page report this morning on cancer screening. It quotes officials from the American Cancer Society as saying, the benefits of screening for some cancers have been overstated. The group is working on new guidelines.
And the U.S. and Israel are holding what's believed to be their biggest ever joint military exercise. The war games are going to simulate a coordinated attack on Israel. The markets were down slightly yesterday. The Dow's going to open up at 10,041. S&P will start at 1091, and the Nasdaq's going to open up at 2163 this morning.
I feel like we're on a schedule all the time. All the time. Schedule.
You
schedule.
Think you're
get
on a schedule.
Done.
They're trying
get
to get elections done in Afghanistan before the winter
hits.
They're
under deadline. They've got a deadline.
Right.
They got a rush in
Afghanistan. That's as opposed to what's going on in Washington.
Healthcare is at a snail's pace.
That's right. But, you know, sometimes it's worth rushing, right? I mean, they say haste makes waste, but sometimes you need to rush, right?
I hear a takeaway question coming.
There's
yes,
a
indeed.
Takeaway
yes,
question
indeed.
Here, and I'm wondering, I'm asking you, what's worth rushing? What is important enough to make you risk mistakes by rushing to get it done? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. So as you heard, President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan has announced there will be a runoff election there with his top challenger, Abdullah Abdullah. It's set for November 7th. And Abdullah says it's no surprise.
I expected a runoff based on the votes, and that was the expectation of the people of Afghanistan.
Yeah, not everyone assumed that Hamid Karzai would agree to the runoff, but President Obama praised Karzai at the White House.
President Karzai, as well as the other candidates, I think, have shown that they have the interests of the Afghan people at heart, that this is a reflection of a commitment to rule of law.
You know, I haven't heard the president use Karzai's name Very recently. That's the first time in a while,
that's
I think.
That's kind of true.
It feels like Kabuki Theater down there in Washington.
President Karzai, that's a title that has not been awarded in a while.
Exactly.
Joining us now to talk about this is Christine Fair. She rejoins us. She's a professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University, also a former election monitor in Afghanistan. Also, we're joined by Amal Pasarli from London. He's the deputy head of the Pashto service at our partner, the BBC. Amal, let's start with you. What are the chances that Karzai, if they do hold this election on the November 7th, that he's going to lose?
Very slim, because in the first round he was leading. And also, to be honest, in Afghanistan, most of the people are of the view that the deals and the friendship, shall I call it, that he has among some political big guns in Afghanistan, the current Afghanistan. So he is in a leading position.
But don't the Afghan people also believe he's completely running a corrupt government?
But the person who is opposing him, Dr. Abdullah, was also part of that regime for a long time. And basically, when you speak to ordinary people in Afghanistan, both of them are from the same wavelength, and both of them are nearly the same record. So I don't think that will affect voters.
So, Christine, you were a former Afghanistan election monitor. What are the chances? I mean, how are we going to move forward with an election that doesn't have fraud in it in Afghanistan? How do we know that we're going to get one without voter intimidation when they're out in these 6 miles to some of these polling places, that the Taliban's not going to threaten people as they go to the voting boxes? How do we make sure that doesn't happen again?
Well, I think we really need to rethink how we think about these elections. In my interpretation, the elections that took place in August, it's really only symptomatic. It's not causal of the deep and pervasive corruption that exists in the Karzai government. The structural rigging of the election began easily in early 2008, if not earlier. So in some sense, institutionally, it would be very difficult to expect a different result. I don't think we're going to see the sort of widespread fraud that we saw in the August 20 election, quite frankly, because widespread fraud does require considerable planning, and the window for that is declining. But there are other issues that remain very much important. The weather is looming. It's snowing in parts of Afghanistan. The logistics of getting election material and people in parts of Afghanistan right now is becoming more difficult by the day. Security remains a problem. The Independent Election Commission is hardly independent. But for my concern is that the elections are symptomatic of a much larger base of corruption. It's not causal. And this really illustrates the failures of the last 8 years on the part of the international community in working with Karzai to try and create a more credible form of government that is able to produce services rather than corruption.
All right, Christine, let's talk about the last 8 years for a moment, and let's just assume in a perfect world that the weather is going to be great in Afghanistan for the next 2 months. Is there any chance that this runoff election could reverse what really was sort of common knowledge, almost folk knowledge in Afghanistan for the last 8 years, that Karzai and his government were basically little more than mayors of Kabul, and this runoff could deliver more of a national governmental mandate in the country?
My short answer is no. Where things matter in Afghanistan is not in Kabul. It's actually in the districts. That's where the Taliban are able to succeed in providing, at a very high price, I might add, some modicum of public service, be it justice, be it jobs in the guise of the poppy industry, and they're able to provide security. All of this happening at a very high price. In contrast, the government doesn't do any of those things in most of the districts where the Taliban have consolidated their position. So I am a pessimist, that this counterinsurgency effort that the United States is so vested in can be successful, because it's not likely in any policy-relevant future that we're going to have the kind of partnership in the Afghan government that we actually need to be successful.
Amal Pasarli from the Pashto service at the BBC. Christine is not the only pessimist. We've been hearing a lot of people saying that we're not actually going to see a November 7th runoff election because Hamid Karzai is now going to furiously try and get a coalition government put together. What is the truth to this rumor, is that he's not going to chance an election and that he's just going to try and work a deal with NATO?
the rumors that I hear is other way around, that Dr. Abdullah is mainly trying for a coalition government now because, I mean, this is the rumors that circling inside Afghanistan. I think Karzai is in a strong position. I think when you hear what he said yesterday was that he was in a way blaming others for the votes that were not counted, and he was in a way trying to pursue Afghans that, look, you voted and your vote was not counted. Come out now and vote and be counted. So I think he's in a stronger position than before. And inside Afghanistan, a lot of people are feeling that the international community didn't do well in regards to the voting. Why? Because back in 2004, when the international community was running the Independent Election Commission in Afghanistan, a lot of people complained about the rigging and the fraud, and nobody bothered about it. And in fact, only once in somewhere in Kabul, those 18 candidates back then were invited by, I believe, some Western ambassador at the time. And the next day, everything was rosy. So they were convinced that shush or shut up about it. Hmm. And this is the feeling among ordinary people, that if the West want to call it, call the election as fraud, it will be fraud. If they count it okay, it will be okay.
And we're also joined by Daoud Soltanzoy. He's an independent member of parliament for the Ghazni province in eastern Afghanistan. Good morning, Daoud. You hear all these...
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? You're a harsh critic of Karzai, and you support his opponent, Abdullah Abdullah. But you also are hearing this discussion...
No, I think I have to correct that. I'm a critic of Mr. Karzai's performance, but I've not supported Abdullah. That's not accurate. I did not support either one, but I am a critic of the mishandling and bad governance and corruption, whoever is in charge.
So do you expect this election to change that?
No, but in order to change bigger problems, we have to take the first steps. Elections usually are first steps if you have the right candidates and if you have fair elections.
Well, Mr. Daoud Soltanzoy, let me ask you a question about your district in Ghazni province. Who's delivering more services to the people, the Taliban or the government?
Right now, my district is totally divided. Half of it is controlled by the international community's presence there, the Polish troops and the Afghan army. The other half is under nobody's control, and sadly, no services have been rendered to that district for a long time. And I'm not blaming anybody. I think people also have not taken enough responsibility to secure to play a role in their own security. So this is a very, very complicated country with complicated problems, and the government has not made it easy for the people to participate in bringing security to the country.
Quickly, Christine, one last question for you. We have heard varying arguments out of the White House with Robert Gates saying we can't wait for a new government to get into Kabul in order to send in more troops, and Rahm Emanuel saying we have to wait. And to what extent does the United States need to have a fraud-free election in order to justify sending more troops into Afghanistan?
I think that's really more to do with the American public, which is becoming increasingly ambivalent towards this war. The role of the Afghan government in the counterinsurgency campaign is absolutely pivotal, but whether or not this runoff election takes place in any way that's more or less credible than August 20, I think it's going to be immaterial. This is
okay.
Really for domestic audiences.
Christine Fair is a professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. We also heard from Amal Pasarli, deputy head of the BBC's Pashto service, and Daoud Soltanzoy, who's a member of parliament from the Ghazni province in eastern Afghanistan.
Keep the conversation going with your thoughts. Send them to us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MYTAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.